Open up our Bibles, because we have been, over the past 4 weeks, looking at an amazing story. And this story is one that, believe it or not, has been taking place before, its origins start before creation even. In the mind and heart of God, God had this plan set that he would put into motion before we were even created, before the world even came to be. This is a long, long-standing plan. And in this plan, God, for thousands of years, leading up to this one point in history, had been busy laying the foundations and planting the seeds for this plan to come about. And so for thousands of years, God had been working with people. He had been sending messages. He had been sending angels to intervene even. He had been time and time again working with us, making sure that everything was in place and ready for the time when Jesus would be born. When the time came, we're talking thousands of years of God speaking. And hundreds of points along that time where he says, this is what's going to happen. When Jesus is born, when the Messiah, the promised one, they didn't know his name was Jesus at this point, when the promised Messiah one would come, that this is what will happen. These are the signs to look for. Hundreds of these signs, all coming down to this one point in history. The preparation he put into Mary. We looked at why Mary. Why is Mary in the story? We looked at that the first week and Reese brought us insight into that. The fact God had prepared Mary and Joseph for this amazing event and this time in history. All the preparations and plans were made. We looked then at the wise men. And why wise men? What do they? Why are they in the story? And how God had brought these wise men from afar, these foreigners who really had not much to do with the people of Israel, but were brought them to be witness to this event as well. We saw last week the angels and the role they played, that they came from heaven to bear witness to the king who was there on the throne at one point in time in heaven with the angels surrounding him, worshipping them. And all of a sudden he vanishes and ends up here on the earth in the form of a child. Well, the angels knew he was even a little embryo in Mary's womb. The wonder of that, the amazement of it, and they make that magnificent declaration that today peace has come to earth as we give glory to the heavens. All these things planned and prepared for this one event, this one day, this one special day that would change all of history. And today we come to look at the question, why shepherds? Why are shepherds in the story? Now, having put considerable time and effort into contemplating this question, I've come to the conclusion that God, in his infinite wisdom, God knowing all things and knowing what was to come for generations after this event, knew that each and every church that ran a Christmas pageant and ran a church kids drama needed somebody to hold the leash for the sheep. That is why God put shepherds in the story, so that someone could hold the sheep. I mean, you can't expect Mary to hold the leash, can you? Mary's just given birth. She's exhausted. Joseph, he's exhausted too. He's checked out. He doesn't know what's going on. He's just missed a miracle. Angels, they're not long enough. They're not there long enough. And you don't expect wise men from the east, do you? Their hands are full with gifts. Who's going to hold the sheep? Now, you might have picked up from the hysterical laughter I can hear that I am joking, that this is not the reason why the shepherds are there. Is there a more serious answer to that question? Why shepherds? Why does God include shepherds? Well, let's turn to Luke chapter 2, verses 8 to 20, and we're going to have a read through that. This is the only account in the scriptures of the four gospels. Luke's the only one that brings us the story of the shepherds, and we're going to read through that. And this is all we know about the shepherds on this day. Luke 2, verse 8. That night there were shepherds staying in the fields nearby, guarding their flocks of sheep. Suddenly an angel of the Lord appeared among them, and the radiance of the Lord's glory surrounded them. They were terrified, but the angel reassured them. Don't be afraid, he said. I bring you good news that will bring great joy to all people. the Saviour, yes, the Messiah, the Lord, has been born today in Bethlehem, the city of David. And you will recognize him by this sign. You will find a baby wrapped snugly in strips of cloth, lying in a manger. Suddenly, the angel was joined by a vast host of others, the armies of heaven, praising God and saying, "Glory to God in the highest heaven, and peace on earth to those with whom God is pleased." When the angels had returned to heaven, the shepherds said to each other, "Let's go to Bethlehem. Let's see this thing that has happened, which the Lord has told us about." They hurried to the village and found Mary and Joseph, and there was the baby lying in the manger. After seeing him, the shepherds told everyone what had happened and what the angel had said to them about this child. All who heard the shepherds' story were astonished. But Mary kept all these things in her heart and thought about them often. The shepherds went back to their flocks, glorifying and praising God for all they had heard and seen. It was just as the angel had told them. Why does God include the angels in this story? And I want to even change the way I ask that, because I want us to see that this is not just a story, is it? This is a plan. This is a plan that God has had, that he has been planning since before creation to make sure that this point in time is significant. And each and every character that's played a part in this plan, everybody that God has involved and brought into it, has fulfilled some kind of function. And I want to say that the shepherds here are part of God's plan. God intentionally brings the shepherds into this story. Now, we need to remember that at this time, there was a census taking place. Remember, this is why Mary and Joseph are actually, while being heavily pregnant, are actually on the road traveling, because they need to get to Bethlehem, because the Romans have declared that the census must be taken and everyone must be numbered. And so Bethlehem at this time is quite full. Bethlehem, as we read, is the city of David. Now, what that meant was to participate in the census, you had to go and register according to your lineage, according to your family tree. And so if you belong to the line of David, to David's family, if he was your great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather, then you had to go to Bethlehem to register, which meant there was a lot of people there registering. A lot of people. And we can only presume David was a pretty well-known, popular Israelite, wasn't he? Can only imagine that there would be a number within his family line that would be wealthy, that would be popular, that would be well-known, that would have prestige, that would have power and sway amongst God's people. And there was a town full of people. The angels could have gone to anybody. It's not like the angels were just there in the right place at the right time. The shepherds were in the right place at the right time, was it? They were not just in the right place at the right time. The angels chose them, singled them out, and appeared before them. And what do we know about them? I'm going to show you a big long list of things we know about them. Okay, that's it. We know that they were nearby, and we know that they were busy working. They were busy guarding their flocks. That's all the Bible tells us. Now, there's a heap of speculation out there about who shepherds were and what they meant and all of that. But as far as this story tells us, that's it. They were nearby and they were busy working. And as I thought about this, as I thought about who the angels are and in God's plan, what role they fit, it struck me that they're almost the complete opposite of the wise men, aren't they? The wise men, were they nearby? No, they were a long, long way away. Were they busy? Were they consumed and occupied with their own work? Well, no. They were looking. They were seeking. They were trying to find this king that was to be born. They were studying the scriptures and the prophecies that predicted that the King of Kings would be born around this point in time. They knew that it would be in the west to them. They were from the east. They knew that this king would be born. They were looking. They were expecting. They were preparing to go and be part of this story. They were investing money in buying not only gifts, but supplies and men and women to come along and to travel with them because it was a pretty dangerous journey. The shepherds, they're nothing like that, are they? They're just sitting there around probably a campfire, telling jokes about stories, hearing the howl of a wolf or something every now and then, just looking up to see if the sheep are all right. They couldn't care less about what's happening in the universe or the world around them. They're the complete opposite of the wise men. In fact, if we had to summarise who the shepherds are, they're just your average person, aren't they? They're just your average Joe Blow. I asked the morning congregation, what's the female version of Joe Blow? Plain Jane. Thank you. That's the one. They're just your average Joe Blow or your average Plain Jane. They're not important. There's nothing special about them. They're not unique. There's nothing that would attract God's attention to them. There is no reason why God would go, hey, we've got to have the shepherds here. You know, I mean, maybe they were the life of the party. Maybe they were. Let's get the shepherds there. It'll be a hoot. It'll be a lot of fun. Let's get them there. We're not told anything like that. These are just guys sitting down, busy, occupied with their work. And that's a bit like us, isn't it? When someone asks you, what's your week been like? How's your week?
Busy.
Yeah, busy. Yeah. So if you're studying or at school, you talk about that. If you're at work, you talk about work. If you babysit the grandkids, you talk about the grandkids. Yeah. Little world, just, oh yeah, this is my little world. I just do my stuff and people ask, I tell them about it. That's just the shepherds. They're average people. But one thing I want to come across loud and clear this morning is that God is in the habit of using ordinary people. God is in the habit of using ordinary people. He does it again and again and again. Just look at the apostles. Now, the apostles, we kind of think of as these holy saints, like, wow, they did amazing things. They stuffed up along the way. They weren't always right, but man, did they get it right. When they got it right, they got it right. But the scriptures go out of their way to tell us that these were just ordinary people. In Acts 14, it tells us this story of John and Peter. Peter and John are walking into the temple courts and they see a man who is lame, who has never walked before in his entire life. In fact, he was born like this, we're told. People know this man. They've seen him there at the temple every day. He's there because his friends and family, they pick him up on a mat, they carry him and they place him there so that he can beg and ask for money. And it's through this begging that he helps support the family that care for him. And John and Peter come and he has his cup out asking for money, and Peter responds. And of course, he says, you know, look at me. And the blind beggar, not blind, the lame beggar, of course, looks up thinking, oh, someone's responding, they might give me some money. So he looks up. And Peter says to him, gold and silver I don't have, but what I do have I'll give you. In the name of Jesus Christ, stand up and walk. And like that, he stands up and walks. Now, of course, pandemonium. People are, is that Wally? Is that an appropriate name? I don't know. Is that Wally? The lame guy? How did that happen? Did you just see what happened? Like, people are talking to this, causing a commotion. The crowd starts to gather and the temple police come and they decide, what do we do? I don't know. Who did this? These two guys, Peter and John, let's arrest them. And so they arrest them, they take them back to meet with the officials. And as the members of the council are meeting with them, and as they look at these men, who've just done something quite extraordinary, this is what they have to say about them. Acts 4 verse 13. The members of the council were amazed when they saw the boldness of Peter and John, for they could see that they were ordinary men with no special training in the scriptures. What this basically meant is they were rejects. They were below them. Every male child in Israel was trained in the scriptures. And at the age of 12 or 14, you were tested. And if you showed an aptitude, an intelligence that was able to not only memorize the scriptures, but apply them and discuss them, then you could continue with your studies. But if you didn't have what it took, you were sent back to your family and said, go learn the family business. You won't be dealing with the scriptures, that's for sure. And so that's why they say they weren't specially trained in the scriptures. These are rejects. These are failures. These are guys that didn't have what it took to talk about God or be involved in the things of God. They were ordinary men. How could they do this thing? This amazing, extraordinary thing. Ordinary people doing extraordinary things. But there is another sentence that follows this verse, and I love this. This should speak to your heart. If this doesn't nourish you, I don't know what will. It nourishes me. The members of the council were amazed when they saw the boldness of Peter and John, for they could see that they were ordinary men with no special training in the scriptures. They also recognized them as men who had been with Jesus. That's the only thing that is different about them. That is the only thing that's significant. These are men who are with Jesus. Now, I don't know about you, but does anyone think about what's going to be written on their... Well, you don't get a tombstone anymore. Your tiny little plaque. It's sad, isn't it? I can't even give a slab of rock to commemorate my death, my life. You know, I just get a little plaque on a little stone. Have you ever given thought what you want written on that? No, okay, I'm the only morbid one here. That's great. Brenda has it. Good on you. I've given it thought. Like, what would you like written there? What would summarise your life? I wouldn't mind that being written on it. Here lies James Ramsey. Born 1977, died whenever. A man who had been with Jesus. I could live with that. I could live with that. I could die with that too. That's significant. Like, that's significant. That's something that makes me stand out. This is what's turned my life from an ordinary life to an extraordinary life. And this is why the shepherds are in this story, I believe. Because God has a heart to take the ordinary and make it extraordinary. To take the ordinary and make it extraordinary. Now, some of you are cheeky. Okay, I'll just put it that way. Some of you question everything. You like to play the devil's advocate. And you say, yeah, sure, James. I hear you saying that God uses the ordinary and makes them extraordinary. But I know for a fact the scriptures have lists of qualifications for people who want to be used in ministry. That if you want to be a leader in God's church, if you want to be useful to God, then you have to meet a certain standard. In fact, 1 Timothy 3 talks about it. It says someone whose life is above reproach. If you want to be a leader in the church, your life has to be above reproach. Well, that's a high standard, isn't it? Your life has to be above reproach. You have to be faithful. You have to be self-controlled. Now, as we go down this list, is anyone still, by the way, has anyone been able to tick all three so far? I have. Has anyone been able to live wisely? Yep. Has anyone been hospitable? Absolutely. Has anyone not drunk too much? I don't drink at all, so that's all right. Although I might be disqualified because I don't drink. I don't know. Maybe. Able to teach, yep. And their kids must respect them. Oh, well. So much for that list. Failed at the end. It's a high and lofty list, isn't it? That's a big list of things. Now, it's not just in 1 Timothy. Titus repeats the list and says similar things. And in fact, in Hebrews 13:7, the author there goes on to say, if you want to be a leader amongst God's people, then you need to live a life that is worthy of being copied. Now, I don't know too many people who can stand there with hand on heart and say, absolutely, come follow me as I follow Christ. Yep, my life is worth copying and mimicking. You would do far worse than to come and follow me. It almost sounds like an arrogant thing to say, doesn't it? And yet this is the standard. So James, don't tell me God uses ordinary people. God's looking for super people. God's looking for people to lead his people who are above reproach. Now, just in case you're thinking, gee, I'm glad I'm not a leader. Those pastors have got it hard. Who do you think's following the leaders? Are they not meant to copy and live the life? Is not the same standard applied to those who would follow? And if we take it even further, Matthew's Gospel, chapter 5, verse 48, and these are the words of Jesus himself. He says, "But you are to be perfect, even as your Father in heaven is perfect." I don't know about you, but can I be honest? I fail. I'm not quite there. Is that agreeing or are you saying me too? I'm not sure which one. Both. Excellent. Now, I don't meet the standard. Humanly speaking, I don't qualify if we look at those scriptures. But does anyone qualify? Does anyone qualify? Now, I know that some of you, well, no, I'll take it on faith. I'll trust that some of you like me and appreciate the ministry I bring. And yet, there'll be some people I occasionally rub the wrong way, or they don't like the way I say something, or, you know, you look and you go, yeah, James, he's a nice guy, he's all right, but, you know, in that, yeah, subpar. Can I just tell you, I'm probably 10 times worse than you think I am. Apart from you, Louise, you probably, it's probably not 10 times. You probably get how bad I am. But who knows how bad I am more than me? I see, no, you don't. I see what runs through my head. I know when I've not just failed others, but I know when I've failed myself. And who is best to say how bad you are? Besides God. You. I mean, don't you disappoint yourself? Aren't there times in life where you are disheartened and discouraged because you just look and you go, my goodness, what are you doing? Why are you like this? Do you not despair at yourself sometimes? Are there not times, like me, where you find yourself just thinking, you are a worthless nobody? You're a worthless nobody. Now, that's not all the time. That's not all the time. But there are times like that, aren't there? Where you just look and think to yourself, who are you? Nothing but a worthless nobody. And left to ourselves, we can be stuck there, can't we? Thinking that. But let me say this. If that sounds familiar to you, then you might take some hope from this. Worthless nobodies are who God has to work with. He doesn't have anything else. All he has is sinners. All he has is people who don't meet the standard, who aren't up to scratch. That's what God has to work with. And in one sense, we could call that ordinary, because we're all like that. But God's not in the business of discarding the ordinary and getting rid of the hopeless. God takes sinners. He sanctifies them. He washes and cleanses them and strips all the rubbish off. And then he transforms them into something he can use. That is what God does. Time and time again, he takes the ordinary and he uses it for the extraordinary. This is the work of God. This is what he does. We see it in the life of the apostles. Ordinary men. People scratch their head going, how on earth are those people being used by God to do that? And he does it with the shepherds. He takes these ordinary people who aren't even looking for it. They're just occupied with their own little world. And he comes and taps them on the shoulder and says, hey, I've got something bigger and better for you. Come and have a look. Come and have a look. The gospel is good news to the world. We are the shepherds in this story. We're the ordinary people that God taps on the shoulder and says, hey, come have a look at what I've done. Come and meet my son Jesus. I want you to meet him. I want you to come and see him. Let me come and spend some time with him. Because I want people to look at your life and go, what's such a big deal about them? They're just ordinary people. But they have been with Jesus. Maybe that's the difference. God's in the business of taking the ordinary and making it extraordinary. Now, when we think of the lives of the shepherds in this story, was it scary? I mean, God was basically sweeping them up out of their own life, out of their own story, and he's sweeping them into his bigger story, isn't he? That's what God's doing here. The shepherds, as they're swept up in the story, was it a scary thing? Yes, they're terrified, it tells us. It's quite a big thing to have your world opened up, isn't it? It's quite nice to keep it nice and safe and secure and comfortable in what I know. But God says, no, 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 life's so much bigger. He opens, it's scary, yes. Did they have to act to do something? Did they have to respond? Well, yes, God says, come and see. Now, the shepherds could have just gone, are we going to run into any more angels? Because if we are, I'm not going. Let's just stick here with the sheep. This will be fine by me. They could have stayed there. They had to respond. They had to take a step of faith and go and see what God was doing. Was it just the angel? Was it just as the angels had told them? Was it just as they'd promised you'd go find this baby? Well, yes. The promise was true. It was fulfilled. When God makes a promise, you can trust it. And did their story change forever? The shepherd's story. Remember, what was it to begin with? They're just out in the middle of nowhere looking after sheep. That's their story. How was your week? Oh, yeah, good. Helped two ewes give birth. Had to pull a little lamb out of a crevice. No, that's right. I did fight away two wolves. That was exciting. Yeah, that was their story. And yet, as we look at the scriptures, let me read verses 17 and 18 again. After seeing him, after seeing Jesus, the shepherds told everyone what had happened and what the angel had said to them about this child. All who heard the shepherd's story were astonished. Wow, what a story. What a story. I want to ask this morning, have you been swept up in God's story? Have you been swept into his story? Has God taken you from just your little ordinary life and said, hey, there's more. There's more. I want to do something extraordinary in your life. Has God swept you up into his story? Because like the shepherds, God's wanting to do that. This is the wonderful thing about God. As God looks down upon us, he doesn't see hopeless nobodies. He doesn't see failures. He doesn't see ordinary, common, normal people. What does God see? As God's looking down right now, looking at you in your seat and those around you, what does God see? God sees something special. Because from the very beginning, he planned and created and designed you to be special, to be extraordinary, to be a child of the King, to be a son and a daughter of the God Most High. That's who you are. When he looks down, that's what he sees. And it grieves my heart that we don't see that. We don't see the same thing. We look at ourselves and we can get so down about ourselves when God's standing there looking, saying, why are you thinking that? I didn't create something that's bad. I didn't create something that's hopeless. I created with wonder and beauty and majesty and magnificence and glory. I breathed my very spirit into you. You bear my image. You are unique and wonderful, and you need to start living like it. Come, let me show you. Come into my story. Come, spend some time with Jesus and see just how extraordinary life can be. That's why I love shepherds. That's why I love seeing the shepherds in the story, seeing that just ordinary people are thought of by God and are included in the Christmas story. We're going to stand and sing. And we're going to, again, just remember and announce what Christ has done by coming to earth, by being sent by God the Father and taking on flesh that he might be born the Saviour of the world, that he might make a way that we can go from the ordinary to the extraordinary, that we can be sanctified, washed and purified and cleansed and transformed to be used by God. I hope this Christmas we can remember this story. We can celebrate this story. We can feel part of this story. And we can share this story just like the shepherds did. When they left, what did they do? They told everyone they could, wow, we've just met Jesus, this little baby who was the King of Kings, the Saviour of the world. And people were astonished. Let's stand, let's sing the first Noel. Noel basically means the first carol, the first song that is sung to remember this time in history. Let's sing.